behaved or dressed had suggested that our relationship had ever been anything other than coolly professional. It was as if in changing her exterior markings, she had also shed an entire mode of behavior. I felt no real loss, not just because I was still fatigued and incapable of focusing my thoughts on anything as simple and devoid of conspiracy as physical intimacy, but also because I sensed her earlier actions had somehow been part of an act. I tried to feel betrayal, but nothing came. It wasn't as if I'd been honest with Zebra myself, after all. "Actually," I said, looking at Zebra's face again and thinking how easily she'd changed herself, "there is another possibility." "Which is?" "That the man I saw wasn't Rivich at all." And then I put down the empty coffee cup and stood up.
"Where are you going?"
"Out." We cabled to Esher Heights. The car nudged down, its retractable legs kissing the rain-slick ground of the ledge. There was more traffic now than when I had last visited the place. It was daytime, after all, and the costumes and anatomies of the strollers were fractionally less ostentatious, as if I was seeing a different cross-section of canopy society, the more reserved citizens who eschewed nights of delirious pleasure-fulfillment. But they were still extreme by any standards I had defined before arriving here, and while there was no one whose proportions deviated radically from the basic adult human norm, within that boundary every possible permutation was on display. Once you got beyond the obvious cases of outlandish skin pigmentation and body hair, it was not always possible to tell what was hereditary and what was the work of mixmasters or their shadier kin. "I hope there's a point to this excursion," Zebra said as we disembarked. "In case you've forgotten, there are two people following you. You say they might be working for Rivich, but don't forget Waverley had his friends as well."
"Would Waverley's friends be arriving from off-world?"
"Probably not, unless they were just posing as off-worlders like Quirrenbach." She closed the door of the car behind her, and the vehicle immediately took itself off on some other errand. "He might have come back with reinforcements. It would make sense for him to try and pick up the trail in Dominica's, if that's where you lost Quirrenbach in the first place, wouldn't it?"
"It would make perfect sense," I said, hoping that I had kept the edge from my voice.
We walked to the rim of the landing ledge, to one of the pedestal-mounted telescopes. The railing which encircled the ledge was chest-high, but the telescopes all had little plinths at their bases, which meant that one was standing further from the ground, the drop all the more vertiginous. I cupped the end of the telescope to my eyes and panned around an arc of the city, struggling with the focus wheel, until I realized that nothing would ever be in focus when there was so much murk in the air. Compressed by perspective, the tangle of the canopy looked ever more complex and vegetative, like a cross-section through densely veined tissue. Rivich was out there, I knew, somewhere in that tangle. A single corpuscle, caught in the pulmonary flow of the city.
"See anything?" Zebra asked.
"Nothing yet."
"You sound tense, Tanner."
"Wouldn't you be tense in my position?" I slammed the scope round on its pedestal. "I've been sent here to kill someone who probably doesn't deserve it, and my only justification for it is some absurd adherence to a code of honor no one here understands or even respects. The man I've been sent to kill might be taunting me. Two other people might be trying to kill me. I've got one or two problems with my memories, and on top of that, one of the people I thought I could trust has been lying to me all along."
"I don't follow," Zebra said,
but it was obvious from the tone of her voice that she did, more than sufficiently. She did not necessarily understand, but she did follow.
"You aren't who you say you are, Zebra."
The wind whipped at her.